Hey everyone, I have a question. Who is Dave? Well, you might know him as Little Dicky, the guy behind YouTube hits like Save That Money and Earth. But did you also know that he has a brand new FX original comedy? That's right. It's called, you guessed it, Dave. Dave is a fictionalized look at Little Dicky's rise to rap stardom as he navigates the music industry with a little help from his friends and his bar mitzvah money. Co-created by Jeff Schaefer, who co-created The League, which I was on, and executive produced by Kevin Hart, Dave is the story of a once-in-a-generation artist who also just got verified on Twitter. Dave is now streaming on FX on Hulu, with new episodes dropping Wednesdays at 10 on FXX.
Yep, Etta, Vita Tonda. And if you know what this means, then you're my love, and you're not some old man in my wife's body. We saw Prelude to a Kiss, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Cause you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth! It is me, Tall John Shear. Excited to talk to you about this gem of a movie today. This is a Alec Baldwin 1992 Meg Ryan romance. I wouldn't say it's a romantic comedy, but it's a romance. And basically, it asks the question, what if you fell in love with the perfect girl only to have her switch bodies with an old man, but you don't know that until much later in the film? And we're going to break it down for you all today. But first, let me introduce my co-host, Mr. Jason Mantzoukas.
Wow. Paul? Wow. This, I am thrilled to be talking about this movie. I did not know this movie existed. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, I'm sure I knew it existed as a VHS box in the video rental store, but I had never seen it. I did not read or look into it at all. So when at minute 42, this became a body swap movie, I lost my shit.
I literally was on the edge of my couch. I put this movie on very late at night, and I was like, I'm going to fall asleep. I'll have to get up really early to watch it. And my mouth was just open, like a gape, like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What? Because it's so bizarre. We'll get into how it's bizarre, but we have actually a very
special... All the myriad ways it's bizarre.
We actually have a podcast crossover event! That's right. June is away this week. She's off shooting Grace and Frankie, so we decided we'd call up our buddies over at The Watch, which is one of my favorite podcasts. So please welcome Andy Greenwald and Chris Ryan. Welcome to How Did This Get Made?
Wow, we are honored to be here.
Thank you for having us, guys.
We are so excited and okay.
So calm.
Well, we switched souls before we
really,
did this.
By the way.
I've been kissing everyone I've seen since last night.
In true Chris Ryan fashion, it would be Andy Greenwald and Chris Ryan!
I'm so subdued now. I have the body of a 42-year-old Jewish person.
Oh, we swap with each other.
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't in on the bit.
Guys, when I first told you what the movie was, you both had seen it, or just one of you had seen it?
I'm proud to say I saw this movie in the theater.
Yeah, I think I did too.
In 1992.
Okay. Wow.
Such a reflection of 15-year-old me.
Right, well,
it appeared thoughtful. I don't know. It wrestled with the major questions of the world, which, by the way, movies don't do anymore, such as what happens if you marry an 80-year-old man,
right? And it also, for me, it also answers a very important question. Like, if you show up at a wedding, can you request a kiss from the bride and be given it?
Yeah.
I mean, look.
You set the terms of your surrender.
I'm like into this as a matchmaking scheme for myself.
I think I saw it in 92 because even at that time, I was a completist when it came to socioeconomic portraits of Jamaica.
Oh, yes.
It was like that and Belly.
Club
Paradise. I just really wanted to get the full picture.
It is another twist of the movie that I'm sure we'll get to, that at minute 58, he's like, take me to the plantation house.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this movie has so many shocking reveals. And the one that I was most excited by was seeing a
Stanley Tucci with hair?
Yes. A fully Stanley Tucci
was
with hair.
Was that it?
That was what I was going to say.
It's amazing.
And he had pecs, too. His shirt is open. He's like rocking a
shredded Tucci with hair?
Yes.
Raise your hand if you Googled Stanley Tucci age. Because he is like a Piven where he actually looked older when he was younger.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
I agree. I also had to look up how old was Meg Ryan in this movie, too, because I was like, where are they at right now as these young people?
Well,
like,
Meg Ryan at this point is a huge star because apparently this is a play, and you can tell it's a play because the dialogue is, we'll play some of it, is bonkers.
Yes. I mean, it's the movie equivalent of people who are like, oh, I don't own a TV.
I mean, this conversation they have about Freud, it's
The conversation about, like, not wanting to bring a kid into this world.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, that's basically, by the way, I saw that play, it was called Lungs, in the West End in London 6 months ago.
Right.
Yeah. Same exact play, like, rapturously received about a young couple in an IKEA being like, is it responsible for us to bring children into this world? And I was like, fuck you!
I was doing this shit in the first Clinton administration, baby!
God damn it, Baldwin and Meg Ryan have this shit covered!
They got it. But
the answer is swap bodies with an old man.
But then the old man asks you to put a baby inside of his old belly.
Right? Yeah.
Guys, like, that was there.
That
I mean,
was intense. Well, their kiss was electric.
I want to work our way up to the reveal because I have so many things to say. Which is, this movie is unnerving from moment one because you don't know what you're watching. Tonally, it's weird. We open up with, like, Alec Baldwin on a roof. He seems very somber. Mm. We don't know why. He goes down to the most square party of all time. Everyone's in suits and sweaters. Yeah.
It's like it's a 90s party. It's a dance party. They're dancing to Roxy music.
Yes. Oh, and to vinyls. I touch myself.
What
and
is happening?
People are sweating their balls off doing
it. It is like the whitest of
Tucci
white
has
people.
His shirt open.
Yes. Yes.
So
his tie still on.
Is the implication that everybody is just coked out of their mind?
See, that's what I wrote down. I was like, because it felt like there's some energy there. It was like, it was like, we're going to have a dance party. It didn't feel like it was a dance party to start off with. It felt like, we're doing it. We're having it now. And
yeah, I agree. I felt like the direction that everyone had been given was, you've just done all the coke.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody seemed sweaty and teeth grinding.
And the lights are on
all
and bright.
On. Oh, yeah. Also, there is a really interesting sliding doors plot opportunity miss where the host of the party.
The Sokols.
The Sokols.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that's a name that drew a chuckle. On Broadway in 1990.
Oh, yeah.
1,000,000%.
How do you know the Sokols?
The Sokols are in the corner, clearly enacting the key party they hope to have.
Yeah.
Oh, funny.
The Sokols are just deep Frenching on the radiator. Oh. No one got that memo.
By the way, that's what is upsetting about this movie. The kissing. Too much extreme
juicy
close-up of kissing, especially at the end. Like, I'm like, oh, what's going on here? Yeah. There's a lot of talk about sex, but the only real, like, physical is mouth to mouth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's a lot of, like, there's such a big, and listen, it's called a prelude to a kiss. Kissing is so much a part of it. The transactional magical element is this kiss between Meg Ryan and this old man where their bodies swap or their souls swap.
Souls, yeah.
But like the whole buildup, I really did enjoy the initial buildup of, it was such a New York. It's a movie. This is a movie that would never get made right now.
Oh, God.
The
God,
idea
no.
that would be 40 minutes of setup.
Yeah.
40 minutes of setup. Well, but nothing happens in the movie.
But this is a play. That's what it feels like.
It charitably. I mean, that's the thing. Like, usually when a play is successful and Hollywood mistakenly thinks it would be a good movie, they let the person who wrote the play do the screenplay.
Yes.
They give them some money and then they go away and then they either ruin it or change it.
And they're like, here's how we improve August Osage County.
Right, exactly. Slam dunk.
Animated
Fences
talking
done.
Parrot.
Nailed it.
But in this one, they were like, quote, Craig, we love the play. No notes. You know your buddy who directed the play. Let's give him a camera. How different could it be?
And the guy from Hunt for October is looking for something to do.
but by the way, the crazy thing about this was it was originally going to star Alec Baldwin and Mary Louise Parker because they did it on stage together.
Oh.
And speaking to Meg Ryan's success, the studio was like, great, but let's just recast Mary Louise Parker and put Meg
still
Ryan.
Still give Baldwin top billing, which was fascinating for 1992.
Yeah, so he's...
Wait, where's Baldwin at this point?
Baldwin is, I mean, this
like,
is...
He's on the come up. He's on the...
Oh, for sure.
He's done Hunt for October.
This is after Hunt, yeah.
Yeah, and it's
this
after...
This is after Hunt, and it's after he's been like, and now I'm done doing Jack
it's
Ryan.
Peace on pastry.
Yeah, okay.
He definitely has the most screen time, so I feel like that's also the reason why, because like Meg Ryan does disappear for
a
chunk.
At a certain point, I wrote in my notes, is Meg Ryan never coming back? Is this now just a romantic movie about Alec Baldwin and an elderly gentleman?
First of all, it would have been interesting. Second of all, yes, here's some lessons that we can apply today, because I imagine your podcast attracts a lot of like people who want to make movies or make write screenplays. And I think the lesson is whenever you can make an introspective, thoughtful story about marginalized groups, be they young women who aren't sure what to do with their lives or elderly men, be sure to focus it on Alec Baldwin. Yeah. Put all of the thoughts filtered through his mind and face.
Because everybody in as a window character, as a character that everybody can get on board for, he's a guy that makes that is the manager of a microfiche department.
Oh, and even
which
smaller
everybody
than,
can get on board for.
A successful microfiche company.
For scientific
he's
publications.
He's got a secretary, as I pointed out.
I was just obsessed with
but
the
But yet he shares an office.
Yes, with Tucci, but has an assistant. I love how this had that still like post working girl baby boom vibe of like every office is the same. No matter what they do, it's like, oh, I've got a secretary. I'm wearing a double breasted suit. And it's like, what do you do?
Nothing
I don't
but
know.
But phones going off in the background. Just like tons of phones.
Yeah. It's just like they read Bonfire of the Vanities and they were like, that's business.
But but that's also what I feel like makes this thing like, feel like a play. Cause it's like, what do you do? Here's the most niche weird. It's like, it's like businessman. It's like, he makes microfiche for scientific things, but smaller than, I guess it's smaller than regular fiche, so it's microfiche.
Yes. Well, you know what microfiche is, like when you go to the library and you zoom
but,
through.
But he was like even saying like his job is even smaller than that. Like he was like, you know what that is, I do the smaller version of it. And then his, then like, I mean, it's a joke, but he can't even say what he does when he's meeting the parents. Like he messes it up like it was almost an improv.
Do you guys do digressions on this podcast? Is that okay?
just
want to check in.
Please indulge.
If you will.
Please indulge,
Andy. Guys in the booth, you can edit this out. The thing is, it's
don't tell them what, don't acknowledge the people in the booth.
They're working on their scientific
These are nobodies. These are nobodies. Don't even look at these jokers.
The thing about this movie is that it appears, and again, I wasn't there on Broadway to see Craig Lucas's original acclaimed production of his own work, but it seems to have a slavish devotion to the original text.
Yes. Yes.
And yet there's also the whisper of a suggestion that there was a lot on the cutting room floor. And exhibit A is that during the scene where we see the inside of Alec Baldwin's office, he cuts to Stanley Tucci.
Yes.
And Stanley Tucci doesn't speak, but his desk is littered with business.
Let's talk about what
it is. With Romo Fizz.
Yes.
With,
and like
with cold medication.
An original glass bottle of Gatorade, which is like the one that Keith Jackson gave the University of Florida. Like,
there's
it's just
a
like,
story
there's a
going on Tucci's desk. In that scene, they've just had sex. Meg Ryan and Alec Baldwin, it cuts from their sex scene, their first sex scene, to this. And Baldwin walks into the office all happy.
Jazzy.
He gets all the way to his office where Tucci is there looking bedraggled.
Yes.
Bedraggled with like cold and sinus medication and stuff all over his desk. No lines of dialogue in this scene. Zero lines.
And then
cuts away.
Tucci begins the film clearly macking on Meg Ryan.
Well,
his shirt is off. And then he's like, here's my heterosexual alpha friend. Take this woman.
Yes.
And then at the end of the movie, it's alleged that he's never once had sexual relations with a woman.
That's what it is. Is he a virgin?
What's going on here?
Stanley Tucci appears to be 62 years old and a virgin in this movie. Beautiful I don't
hair.
Know what's going on.
But I'm going to tell you what I think is happening in that office scene. And I think it's bad like movie timing, because they have that big crazy party, they're all drunk, but then Alec Baldwin says at the party, where do you work? She's like, I work at that bar. He's like, on Saturdays. So then we know that he's all right. So let's say that party was on Friday.
Right.
He goes to the bar on Saturday. So then they have sex Saturday night. So then he goes into work on Monday.
So Tucci's been doing coke since Friday.
Yes.
That's it.
I think that's what they're
the
trying to
The story of the
off.
Movie is that Tucci's had like a fucking absolute banger of a weekend.
By the way,
Tucci, by the way, that's this movie might exist in the other side of the Day Trippers. This movie might perfectly intersect with Greg Mottola's Day Trippers, wherein Stanley Tucci is off partying, and at this party where he's with Meg
His
Ryan and Alec
life.
Baldwin,
yeah.
Hope, who is it? Hope Davis and Anne Mara are looking for him, and Liev are all looking for him in a station wagon.
By the way, we were asking before where Baldwin was, and it's in weird time, because I'm looking at his like IMDb right now. So he does Hunt for Red October in 90.
Right.
Right. Then he does Miami Blues, interesting,
great
cool movie. movie.
Charles Williford adaptation.
Oh, really? Oh, so, yeah. So then he goes.
No, you love authors. You love books.
How did this get written in books. My life?
Chill out, Craig Lucas. Yeah.
So then he does Alice, a Woody Allen movie. So this is like, those three are like, oh, wow, okay. And then he goes Marrying Man. Prelude to a Kiss. Oof. Glengarry gets in there. So that definitely is a stronghold. And then it's Malice. The Getaway, which was not good. The Shadow.
We did that.
Yeah. The Juror. Movie called Heaven's Prisoners.
Yeah, that's a Bayou detective show.
I hate to tell you, it's James Lee Burke adaptation.
Yeah.
Ooh, thank God we got the book bros
and
here.
And there is a ton of humping in Heaven's Prisoners.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But this is a crazy, I mean, it's like, he doesn't really, like, this is the
that,
moment.
Is that the review you wrote?
I think, like, 93 CR was, like, earmarked that way.
Just, humping.
Yeah.
In the you had, like, a little code at the beginning of every book.
I had, like, a Dewey Decimal System, and it was just, what? Like.
I think as a kid, I kept, like, sexy scenes on a VHS.
What? Yeah.
Wow.
Like, not even porn.
That you would transfer? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you would tape that? Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Because I wasn't able to get my hands on anything more hardcore.
And do you remember what any of them were?
No, but, like, a scene like that would be on there.
There were some,
like,
sex scenes in Excalibur where I was just like, need to remember that. Even though it's Arthurian, it still applies.
Period boobs are still pretty great.
There was a cable channel in Philadelphia called Prism that was, like, the attempt to be HBO. And the thing about Prism is, like, sure, they showed Flyers hockey games, but every so often at, like, 3 p.m., if you were homesick, they would show Blame It on Rio.
Oh,
which
weird.
Is a classic of the genre.
Yeah.
Not a 3 p.m. movie.
No, but that's shocking.
For a young book bro.
Oh,
well, oh my
for
God.
A young book
well,
bro.
Hey, let's talk about books.
Who's just Clash trying to take out Lady Chatterley's lover from the public library.
Clash of the Titans also is a movie that it was like, well, this is like almost schoolwork, right? And it's got naked ladies in it.
But Heaven's Prisoners, all those Baldwin movies around that early 90s is just like in the post-Basic Instinct bone zone.
Yeah. But everybody wanted to be Astro House.
What's amazing about that run you just named on IMDb, it is the very rarely seen one for them, six for me.
Right.
Four for them, I guess.
Yeah, because even Glengarry Glen Ross is not like a big like hit. It's like that's an indie movie or, you know, it's like.
Oh, and he's also, Baldwin's a tiny part of it.
Yeah.
You know,
That's, and it's a unique scene written for the movie.
Who wrote it, Jason?
Who? The book man.
Some nerd.
Book nerd. Bookmer Davy Mamet.
What I also want to talk about is like the way that they do show sex in this movie. Like when they seemingly show Alec Baldwin like post-coital, like he's
I've been waiting.
I got a lot of notes on this.
and then they do an overhead shot. She's obviously fully clothed, and we're as a hairy chest brother, we're seeing that hairy chest out there. But then they're surrounded by food, like this.
Doritos and peanut butter.
Doritos, raisins.
I'll do the
talking
wine.
About bone zone. Yeah.
That Doritos package was amazing.
Yeah, Fruit Loops, dry and with milk. Doritos, raisins, peanut butter. Yeah,
like, and they're also on the floor.
Yeah. Yes, and nothing beneath.
That also to me was like, oh, this is movies. Movies like this reminded. This made me nostalgic for a time when I believed. Successful sexual relations with a woman.
You guys talked about this with Reindeer Games. It's like, how hard do you have to fuck that you just stay on the floor?
Yes.
I can't get up. No, I'm out.
This is where I want to be.
Can I say also that, yes, when you go to the movie theater at 15, you're questing. You're looking for things.
Oh,
you want to learn about life. You want to learn about kissing old men.
Absolutely.
You want to learn about sex, perhaps. What this movie taught me, and it stayed with me, was just the sheer bear pelt level of body hair.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Baldwin's
yeah.
Rocking,
oh, yeah.
And was awaiting some of us as we traversed puberty.
Like, yeah, if you don't know. You don't know what you're going
to
get.
And this time, years later, watching it, having not grown in to the forest of Nottingham that
sure,
he was,
yeah.
What I thought of first and foremost was that video that was going around on the internet of the hawk's head while the body was moving, but the hawk's head stays exactly still. That's what Baldwin's head looks like with this, like, hawk animal body beneath him. Well, the head is pivoting.
Well,
on
I remember
there are some moments where I feel like someone, like, tamped it down, and then there's sometimes there's a little bit more wild.
Yeah. Yes.
Because, like, when he's in Jamaica, it's definitely more coiffed.
Yeah.
Those scenes confused me because I was like, oh, am I watching a scene about an Armenian man? And if so, that changes how I feel about the movie. And that's coming from a Greek.
By the way,
so these are shots.
Yeah, that is an Armenian bird.
There's some like weird things that come around in this movie about sex too. At one point, like
the blowjobs with Tucci.
Yes. Oh,
the okay. speech where he and Tucci talk, and where he's like, you know, have you ever had that feeling?
Can I play it?
You play it. Because
this is
a bananas scene.
Yeah, this is pretty great. Here we go.
This is sort of a bizarre question, but have you ever been having sex with somebody?
No.
And they're doing everything right, more or less.
Oh yeah, sex. I remember.
And you just get the feeling that something is wrong. I mean, they pretty much stop doing some of the things they used to do and only do certain things now, more traditional sorts of things.
Blowjobs, you mean?
No, I'm not talking about anything specific.
No one likes to do that.
Well, that happens not to be strictly the case, but...
No, I'm just telling you. No woman ever enjoyed doing that.
Like, what is Tucci's story? What's Tucci's plot?
You haven't had sex, but you know all about it.
Why? That's the most enigmatic line I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You've never had sex. Wait, what?
Get out of that scene. We're done. We don't need to explore that anymore.
Also, the movie in general has a very notional relationship with darkness, because this is preceded by a scene with Meg Ryan where she's like, tell me your darkest fantasy. And he's like, walk across a room and seduce me?
Yeah. Oh, no, unzip my pants with your mouth.
He said unzip me. He said me. Like, what? Wearing everything.
But that's
covered
what this,
in Dorito dust?
That's what this movie is about. Who are we really? The external doesn't matter. He's saying unzip my skin suit and reveal the old man beneath?
But, I mean, there's also, I mean, there's so many things. But the one thing I want to just call out is when she's talking about meeting her parents for the first time, mm-hmm. she's like, oh, I told me I have good sex life and that you use protection. And then the scene goes on and he just goes, protection. that was the biggest
as
joke.
As if she's hilarious for suggesting that he would be prepared.
Is that what you think that is?
Yeah.
That's lambskin, my sister.
I was like, that was a crazy...
That wasn't protection. Those were Fruit Loops.
Oh, my God.
Those were raisins, my girl.
When they do meet the parents...
Are we doing a separate pod about that scene? Because I've budgeted time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, dig in, bro.
Yes,
chronologically, like there is some stuff we have to address with their initial meeting at the Tin House.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the first...
What a cool bar that is.
First thing when Andy and I were talking about this movie together, after I was like, after he asked me how to watch it,
I apologize.
This one took me a while.
It took me a little while.
Chris, it's a veil under darkness of night with Arabic subtitles.
Yes.
If you know where to look.
I had to sign up for a 7-day free trial to Starz.
We should send each other text messages. Yeah.
I watched it. It was on demand on DirecTV.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Wow. I learned. I've been paying for Starz. So we all learned.
Huge. But Andy and I were texting about this last night.
You're part of the 1%, man. You're paying for subscription to services you don't even know.
I just love content.
In 92, it was still like, you know, product placement was pretty, like, it was not very common. So if a brand showed up in a story, it was usually for a reason. And even though we've been talking about this a lot, I still don't understand the Molson bit in this movie. So in the bar that Alec Baldwin goes to visit Meg Ryan in the bar she works at.
Can I talk about that bar too?
Please.
It's a folk club that looks like it's in an old Italian restaurant, but yet a punk is at. It seems like no one,
and in the background in one scene, like the marvelous Mrs. Maisel does a set.
Yes. It kind of has a Scorsese After Hours feel.
Yes.
But we couldn't get any of those actors.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, to go
and
ahead.
And he walks in and she's unloading, she's like doing, her barback is like unloading a bunch of stuff.
By the way, she's acting as her own barback, which I thought was really poor.
Yeah, I thought that was.
And also, she has a nicer apartment based on her bartending salary than he does.
Yes.
He spent all his money on a trench coat.
As the manager. And blouse, he wears clothes.
He moves
clothes,
in with her.
His shirts are, and well, he moves
also
in with her.
Yeah. Paying chicks to undress him with their teeth. So it's like, that's fair.
When you first see him in the movie, his shirt I thought was dirty. I was like, oh, is this gonna be like a flashback, like, how did your shirt get so dirty? I was like, nope, that was just the fashion of the time.
It made me so happy.
It had a Parker Lewis vibe to it.
To see Baldwin, young Baldwin, dressed in hipster clothes.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, not dressed for period, not dressed to be a man, to be young and hip in the early 90s. He's dressed like Chandler Bing. It's like nuts.
So they go into this bar. He goes to visit her, and she is very, very clearly unpacking a case of Molson.
Yes.
Molson is a Canadian lager, I believe.
Sure.
I've had it before.
It's available sometimes in America.
It's super okay.
It's not the beer of Chicago, where this movie purports to be set.
I'm 42. I can safely say I have never, ever, ever heard anyone say, do you want a Molson?
Yeah,
so
never,
much so. Do you guys have a Molson, even though it was obvious that there is a case of Molson in front of you?
I've never seen anyone, I'm going to go on record and say, I don't think I've ever seen anyone drink a Molson.
That, when it was said in the movie, do you have a Molson or I'll take a Molson or whatever he says, it might as well have been as if someone said, oh, are you flying today? And you were like, yes, I'm flying on Pan Am. Like, it felt like a reference to a long dead product or company or something. Like, is Molson still a beer? But I assume.
Here's the thing. I did some more consideration of this, and I want to blow your mind a little bit further. Yeah, because, please. Yes, Molson is a thing. She has a case of Molson. She offers him a Molson.
In her apartment.
Old man Meg Ryan is I've poured you a frosty Molson fresh from, I want to say, Winnipeg.
Yep.
But there's a second thing here that a second thread that if you pull it, there's no telling how high this goes. Underneath the case of Molson in the bar is a case of Kirin Lager, a Japanese beer.
Interesting. Oh.
When they go to her parents' house, which we'll be covering on next week's podcast.
Yeah.
And she suggests morning beers all around.
Which was weird.
The parents drink exclusively Kirin Lager.
As most people, most retirees who live in suburban Chicago would.
Well, this is the 90s. Before craft beer, this is when everything was imports.
It's true.
Heineken.
The question
Grolsch.
Is, did beer big distributor pay for this movie?
That's what I'm kind of wondering.
Because it's not just Molson.
Gotta be some big...
How deep does this go?
Well, this is when I thought, when there was the scene with the Fruit Loops and the Doritos and so forth, I was like, are these all the same parent companies?
Yes.
Are all these items inclusive of these beers, perhaps owned by the same conglomerate?
I watched this after the Super Bowl, and I was like, Procter & Gamble, guess who did it first?
Prelude to a Kiss.
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, look, I think the reason why they had to pick something very specific plot-wise is... They need her not to be able to drink it later, right? Like, they need to be able to say, like, Molson, but Dewar, she does do Dewars.
Yeah.
But why not Heineken? It's Dutch. Like, the language they speak.
Maybe
I'm just giving scriptures here.
But do you feel like it's like the playwright going like, I drink Molson.
Yeah. met a girl once who was like, I'll have a Molson or whatever, like in Canada, and was like, that's a great bit. I'm going to use that.
Because also, like,
never changing Molson.
It's in my Moleskin. You know, like, I really, like.
It's just a weird, like, generally I'm pro specificity, but this movie is so exactingly focused on the beer they're drinking, but so blasé and vague about everything else talk about and think
and
about.
And Molson has no, like, value.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It gives us nothing except questions.
Our Canadian listenership.
Oh, here's the thing. I'm happy to put Canada on blast.
They know. We will be in Canada, Vancouver.
I don't care for you.
Armenia.
They're gonna throw Molson at you, yeah.
Guess what, Canada? If you wanna talk to me about this, show up at our Vancouver show in late February. I've got notes.
People, I've talked about this place for literally years. I just have to say it to you. Squarespace. What? Squarespace. What are you saying? Squarespace is the place where you need to go. Squarespace is the place that you need to go. For what? Building a website. What? Showcasing your work. Wait, hey, what else? Starting a gym just for dogs. You can do it all on Squarespace. Why? Because they have amazing templates that look great. They have powerful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell anything online. Analytics that will help you grow in real time. Plus, it's optimized for mobile. Where? Out of the box. There's nothing to patch or upgrade ever. Hell no. Buying domains is simple. As a matter of fact, I just transferred one. It was great. Squarespace empowers millions of people, from designers to lawyers to artists to gamers and even you dog gym owners. Head to squarespace.com/bonkers for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code bonkers to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/bonkers. Offer code bonkers. And you know what? I didn't even get nominated by the iHeart Awards for best ad reads. What the fuck, man? But here's the thing.
the movie is weird with every product it has. Yes. Because when they visit the parents, the mom is carrying a bowl of potato chips and never puts it down.
Outside, she's like, I got to take these outside. Yeah. Like, they live in a really nice house. You obviously would have had a table. She could have been like, I'm going to put this bowl of chips down.
Yeah.
Then carries them to the couch, holds them while talking to Alec Baldwin. And it's just like no one ever has any chips.
Like a baby. It's like, what's why?
That mother is also the wedding photographer.
Patty Drake.
What? Yeah. She's taking the pictures that's of true. Them on the balcony on the second floor. She's not in that picture because she's taking it.
They're quite well off. They seemingly spirit their daughter away to London on a moment's notice.
But are they on the, don't they have like a lakefront
lake
view?
Front view?
Yes. Gorgeous. Yeah.
It's, again, and I'm sorry to steer this towards trying to make excuses or plausibility here, but I do think the mom carrying an Econo-sized bowl of chips throughout a scene slays on Broadway. Because you're constantly watching it, and you're like, how funny. She hasn't put it down. She's got business. But if you only cut to her once every 8 lines in coverage, it's just bizarre.
Yeah.
And I will say, just if you are listening and you have not seen this movie, so far, nothing weird has happened.
That's right.
This is just a romantic comedy.
24 minutes in, I said, what is this movie about? What is the plot?
How much?
It would be 20 more minutes later until the face, the body swap
because
happened.
If you have younger listeners, like, I do
we
think
don't.
It's worth, I figured not, I was being
there's
nice.
No young people. And if you're young and you're listening, unsubscribe right now.
Get back to Canada.
You get out of here. Go back to TikTok.
They're all just drinking Molson on TikTok.
Yeah, spit-taking at this inanity. I just, like, it's worth explaining to people, if we can, what percentage of films released between 1989 and 1994 were just people talking.
Yeah, and also, but also.
Right. We paid happily for
there were tons of rom-coms around this time with stuff like this. I can't remember that. I think it was called Only You, but there's like this Robert Downey Jr. Tomei movie where it's like.
Is that the Heaven one?
No, that's the one where he puts the slipper on her.
Yes,
and
okay,
it's essentially Cinderella, but like he lies about who he is for like the whole movie and then she gets mad and then it's over. But like. It's like that was like that was full
remember
on like
when you
a
could
genre.
Still fall in love by lying to someone for the whole movie.
Steve Guttenberg's Don't Tell Her It's Me where he pretends to be like an Australian motorcycle guy but he's also like a nerdy accountant.
But today's woke culture doesn't let us
outright lie to women for the entirety of our dating period.
Unreal.
Cancel culture eliminated identity theft.
But I mean all these rom-coms. I just was looking at like Meg Ryan last night. I was like, "Oh, Meg Ryan is in a lot of these like Kate and Leopold, French Kiss.
French Kiss.
You know, it's like they're like all these movies that just are, they seem like, oh, that's a romantic
He's
comedy.
A basketball ref and she's a bookstore owner.
Oh,
yeah.
gosh. So crazy. And this is 92. So you're thinking this is the year that Batman Returns comes out, Lethal Weapon 3, Sister Act. Also the year that Lawnmower Man, Sleepwalkers, or Stop or My Mom Will Shoot comes out. But it's like, this was the movie, like, we were talking about this before, like, there's the sexy movies, like the Sliver, Basic Instinct, there's that, but then this was a giant part of the 90s.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. But, like, also these adult kind of, not romantic comedies, because this movie is not leaning into comedy at all, but this also isn't Frankie and Johnny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This also is based on a play.
It's
you know
stuck
what I mean?
It's somewhere not between Frankie and Johnny and vice versa.
Like the best version of it is like maybe like Notting Hill, but then there's a
Got magic. Like this shit's got magic in it, which is weird.
It's weird because there is like a moment where it feels like, you're right, it takes so long to set up and it takes so long for the body switch to happen. But when it does, and when you get out there and you... When Kathy Bates shows up in this movie with like your eyes now, you're like, oh, this is like when Bardem shows up in Skyfall. Bates is here.
By the way,
Bates is in the movie.
She shoots this movie the day after she wins an Academy Award for Misery.
Right.
Literally the day after.
So you're just like,
wow, this business.
Bates!
This business will humble you. What can I say?
And she has like 3 lines in the movie.
Also, all the lines are with the number one guy of the
90s. Yes.
If
we
you
just
shot
did,
in Chicago.
We just did a movie with him.
He is contractually obligated to be in it.
What movie did we do last week?
Holy
Matrimony. He's the fair runner in...
He's in everything.
He's in The Fugitive.
Of course.
In Holy Matrimony. Yeah.
The guy who plays Molly Ringwald's dad in Breakfast Club is also a cop in The Fugitive. There's like 3 actors in the history of Chicago.
Oh, well, that's... Oh, wow, that guy's name just jumped straight out of my
head. I watched it go.
He's like in every Andrew Davis movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
This guy, the guy we're talking about right now is...
Richard Ryle.
Yeah.
Or, yes. Yeah. Who that's has been, guy. Yeah. That's the guy in this movie. This is the guy who's painting the house, who even in his like two lines is like, oh, I want to spend more time with this guy. I like him in his shorts also, painting a house.
Yeah.
What? So let's talk about the elephant in the room, which is the 42-minute introduction of an old man.
Yes.
Played by Sydney Baker, who fit the bill.
Totally.
By the way,
an old man, well cast.
Supposed to be Alec Guinness dropped out right before he started shooting.
Yeah.
Wow. Right? Whoa. He's like,
which would have been interesting, but yet, but it is odd.
Is it because he didn't want to kiss Baldwin?
He saw some dailies of that hairy chest.
They did a chemistry test. They did a chemistry test, and he was like, I'm not feeling it.
The studio was like, no.
But this is my issue. Like, so this guy, the older guy, like, when you do this switch, I think my big core problem with this movie is the body switch isn't fun because, like, even if you go in the most basic body switch movie, like Vice Versa or, like, the one with Dudley Moore and Kirk Cameron, like, these old school ones, like, both actors seeming like they're having a lot of fun, like, embodying the other. And I don't think that I love Meg Ryan. I don't think that she's doing a great job embodying.
Well, everybody
but we also
seems
don't
like
get to know him.
Yeah, everybody seems like they're in jail. They're in soul jail.
Yeah.
They're like, oh God, this sucks.
it goes to the point that the movie goes out of its way to answer a question literally no one was asking, which is 42 minutes into the movie. It's not just people weren't saying, boy, you know what this movie needs is some body switching or Baldwin Frenching an old man.
Yeah.
That's not even it. No one is watching this movie saying, gosh, I wonder if they're committed to this or if she would rather be an old man close to death. None of that is on the table. They're just talking blowjobs and Doritos.
And also, and all of a sudden, the old man's life, we get no peek into.
He's sitting on a chair.
So we don't understand the stakes. We don't understand the why.
No,
we
the
don't
first understand. Time you see him, he's like, it seems almost supernatural. Like he's like, must get up, go to wedding, like Terminator
seems
style.
Like there's a story at play there, and there isn't.
He even gets on the train. He doesn't even have a destination. He just hears somebody else say Forest Hills, and he's like, Forest Hills.
Great idea.
And the bummer for it is like a body swap movie. Like really, I'm trying to think. Can you guys name a body swap movie that is not comedy?
Face Off.
I said that is
not. Oh, I'm so sorry. I stopped listening.
No, you know what I mean. Like
no,
the idea of a body swap is that there's comedy to be derived from that now.
Yeah,
but because we don't know who he was, so we don't understand where Meg Ryan goes.
It's almost like, kind of nefarious.
The
honestly,
character we're following, the Meg Ryan character, one of the only two leads of the movie, the only two people who've talked for 42 minutes are Meg Ryan and Alec Baldwin. She disappears.
You know what this comes close to? The movie that we did with David Duchovny where his wife swapped with
secret.
His daughter. Yeah.
The Secret.
Which, I mean.
That's a
real movie. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Whoa. That's a body swap movie that is not funny.
So basically, the wife and the daughter get into a car accident. The daughter daughter lives.
The wife dies.
Yes.
Her consciousness goes into the daughter's body.
And then Duchovny wants to fuck.
No, the daughter keeps wanting to fuck Duchovny.
Right.
The wife in the daughter's body. Yeah. Yeah. The wife's consciousness in the daughter's body keeps coming onto him and being upset that he won't reciprocate, and he keeps being like, you look like my daughter.
Yeah. Like, that's an impediment. Yeah. Yes. for a stone cold fox like Duchovny.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Who also is in the same Alec Baldwin era of like, I mean, they share a lot of similarities.
Can I also just say, like, in the spirit of wishing this had been better, there's something here that could have been interesting, right? Where the older man gets a second chance at life in the body of a young woman and is like, I guess I'm open to sleeping with Alec Baldwin a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And then becoming pregnant with Alec Baldwin's baby. And it almost does that, but it doesn't, whether it's that maybe 1992 wasn't ready for that movie, but that character was ready. And
seemed
then we
like
just
it, although
away from
I don't
it.
Know. Did they ever have sex? Do we think?
Yeah, because then he's talking to Tucci, and he's just like, "Why doesn't she want to?"
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
And you have to imagine that they had a lot of sex in Jamaica.
I mean, look,
I would assume so. It's their honeymoon.
Yeah,
they're at the plantation house. What could be sexy?
And by the way, why, if you switch bodies with a young woman, would your first instinct be put a baby inside of me? Like, why would you be like, "I'm so free. My life is everything is great," and she's like, now, please knock me up. Like,
please. Or let me go play canasta with the other old people here at the plantation house.
I just want to like go to one thing that you were saying. Like, what question is this movie asking that anyone wants the answer to? Like, it's because it's not like most body switching movies. It's like, oh, wouldn't it be great to be like, my dad's so uptight, I don't get him. Now I have to have his job, or you know, or
what lesson needs to be learned?
Usually, they're about lessons learned about two people who are already in proximity.
Well, I think that there was supposed to be more tension. Yeah. I think there's supposed to be more tension in the fact that he is portrayed kind of as a conservative guy. Like, I think he's supposed to be really straight-laced, and she's supposed to be this wild, free socialist. And that there is supposed to be some sort of, like, that's where the tension is for those two characters. Yeah. But I don't know what happens once they switch
souls. But by the way, it's very loose on that because... Yes. Because he's in the beginning, we see him. All right, so he's not totally comfortable at the party, but then he dances and goes after her, and he's so
Alec
happy.
Alec Baldwin dancing in this movie in the first scene needs to be a meme immediately.
Yes, get that going. Please, someone do that.
I thought his dancing was so bad that it was going to be a joke between them.
Yeah, but like, instead, she's like, I'm interested.
Yes.
Yeah, she's like, no, this guy's
She's like,
hot.
This guy knows how to move. Yeah. And then, this is peak white people dancing at a party.
And then she's like, clearly interested in him. Yes. And he's like, okay, I'm good. I'm going to ghost on this party and then look up at her and he's just like, I'm playing this to perfection.
Yeah. Oh, I got to go. I've got voiceover to do outside.
I want to play a bit of his voiceover, this is one of my most disturbing pieces of voiceover. Here we go.
When you're first getting to know someone and in that blissful, psychotic first flush of love, it seems like every aspect of their personality, their whole demeanor, the simple, lovely twist of their earlobes, and their marvelous phone voice, and their soft, dark, wet, whatever, is somehow imbued with an extra push of color.
I mean,
so here's the question. Is this meant to be open-minded, or does he not know? Does he fully not know anatomy?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
That's cool too.
No, I think it's just supposed to be so cool and so smart.
It's supposed
so
to be
hip.
Slightly like more like masculine Woody Allen.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's like, exactly what it is.
But again, I just don't know. Like at the end of the day, like I think the idea is, I mean, it's hard to be like, because I think there's a version of the story is like, couldn't you fall in love with, like, if you just were in love with her for her looks? Because he's like, I love your hair, I love your feet. And then if you become this old man, can you still be in love with that woman? That's a really interesting, shallow Hal obviously kind of gravitated towards that concept. But the idea of like, can you fall in love versus, you know, looks? But that's not what they're going for.
Well, so like they're the quote unquote best scene in this movie to me, and it's got to be seen in the context of this ridiculous movie that's around it, but it is when he comes home and she's basically body snatched from the journal.
Yes.
And she's like, I made you a drink.
Yes.
I made you the dinner you like. Here's, all this stuff. And is like basically mimicking the Meg Ryan character.
It's like an invasion of the body snatchers.
Yeah.
Type
I thought
scenario.
It was like that. This is creepy and cool.
I love that.
And he starts crying and he's just like, you are pretending to be her, but you are not her. But that, like, they lose that tension so fast because that's when they're like, we need to spirit her away to London.
And then they also do that other thing where, I mean, it also is a condemnation on her parents, because how would her parents and her seem to have a great relationship. Yeah. Like, they have hands, you know, they're drinking morning beers, they know how to, they have special cheers and toasts, and they don't notice any difference.
Sure.
Yeah.
And by the way, she also, and this is very playwrighty, she hasn't slept since she's been 14, and it's not an exaggeration. She has literally never slept since she's been 14. Like, I mean, which is like...
I mean, she should look worse than Tucci.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's another kind of crazy element. That's the first way that he kind of realizes something's up is that she's sleeping.
But that's the thing is they have no discernible problems whatsoever. Mm-mm. That the body swap needs to highlight and course correct, right?
Yeah.
They don't need anything.
Yeah.
This catastrophe just happens to them. And Baldwin has to then become like an amateur detective to try and figure it out. He figures it out pretty quick and is totally cool by being like, my wife's been soul swapped. I don't know with who. And then starts accusing her. Like, I loved that in the sense that I was like, yes, make this now a movie about him losing his mind.
Yeah.
Okay, if that's what this
and
movie is.
And her gaslighting him.
Yeah. Yes, great. I'm on board for that. But no, she just disappears.
Well, here's another better version of the movie. What if it was like this idea, like it's through his mind, like she has changed when he got married, but no, he just looks at her differently now.
Right.
Like, you know,
or make if you're going to make it about that character and they do try to pack in some aspect of tragedy, like he has no relationship with family.
Right.
He lived with grandparents. This idea that he had no stable figures for whom to love or to trust. And then the person he falls in love with suddenly becomes someone else. That's an interesting psychological exploration of the dude. But this isn't that either. No.
This is like, let's bring the old man back to his old house. He's going to escape out the window. We'll hear a cat go meow.
He's got
my favorite time.
He's got stage 4 lung cancer and just gets slightly
and cirrhosis. And cirrhosis, he's...
It's so dying.
I feel weird piling on the movie because it doesn't have ill intentions.
No.
It just is this product of this era that was peak white guy being like, well, I'm wondering if that's interesting. And everyone on Broadway being like,
you can kind of watch it. Yeah. And, you can be like,
and then in the harsh light of Hollywood, they're like, nope, not
because
actually interesting.
If anything, this movie should be about Meg Ryan.
Yes.
She has by far the more interesting arc in this movie. On her wedding day, she is forced into the body of an old man and has to walk away from her own wedding into his sad life.
Which we never see her in.
No, never
not for a moment.
Why wouldn't they
She's
ever
like,
do that?
She's like, I was
that?
Just waiting in suburbia
what
somewhere.
What was she doing?
By the way,
for him to figure it
for
out.
For 2 weeks.
And by the way, what was that moment when you first see Meg Ryan in Jamaica and she's looking in the mirror and then she looks
at her body.
Looks at her body.
One of those.
Yeah. And then she's like, then she goes out shopping.
I think she's supposed to buy old woman clothes.
Okay, because that kind of looked like, I guess, now I was like, okay.
That's fashionable now, but I think in the movie it's supposed to be like you're dressing like Rue McClanahan.
Okay, got it. Okay.
And Baldwin's just like, you're so daffy. This is weird.
Like, what? Yeah, because she goes shopping.
And then Baldwin is like, I'm trying to go on a bender. Like, he's like, it's 2 o'clock. It's Long Island iced tea o'clock. Let's
by the
get
way, the fact that the that's one drink.
Everyone knows what's in that drink because everything's in that drink.
Yes.
That is as easy to decipher as a gin and tonic, which is just gin
It's
and
an
tonic.
All-inclusive resort in Jamaica. And they are like, yeah, I don't know that one.
And but I do love that, like, this is, again, making me think the screenwriter has this a weird relationship with liquor. It's Molson's and Long Island iced teas. Yeah.
No in between. And then when he's really upset, double vodka on the rocks.
Yeah,
that's right.
He's jumping all over
that's
the place.
Right.
Oh.
I don't know how you guys like to play it, you know, as we alluded to earlier.
Fast and loose, baby.
It's a sensitive time. Cancel culture and all that.
Yeah. Of course.
We're on the eve of the Iowa caucuses here. Do you want to spend 50 minutes talking about the poolside Long Island iced tea scene?
Oh, I mean...
Should we talk about Plantation House?
Yes,
Is the world ready?
Well, let's first talk about the Top Boy scene where it's just like a long tracking shot through downtown.
Oh, right. And they clutch each other's
which
hands.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Where they're just like terrified of black people.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this? I wrote down like, what is this sequence?
Yeah.
Because at this point you don't... I mean, I didn't get that they swapped bodies. I didn't fully put it all together yet.
What?
The one thing...
What? Wait a minute. You didn't put it together?
I didn't put it together. Did I miss it when they kiss?
Of course. They kiss and then they cut to a point of view shot of Meg Ryan in the old man's body looking up at her parents.
And calling him honey. Yeah.
The wind rustled. And for those not watching at home, Jason just did a universal director of photography sign.
Yes.
To indicate with two fingers where the camera was pointed.
Sorry.
You know what? I'm
changed?
In the biz, baby.
Who's changed?
I'm in this biz.
I thought that when she like was hanging out the window going like, I love you all. I was like, oh, maybe I just misinterpreted it. Because that movie does have weird POV shots. Like when Alec Baldwin's coming to visit the parents, all of a sudden the camera's in his POV.
Yes.
And like, but for no
Why
reason.
Why did they do that?
They talk and they're like, chips?
Yeah. Yeah, like,
and it's really in those moments, the actor is forced to look down the lens.
Yeah.
Which is a really weird
thing. The wildest thing about the Kingston sequence is that, like,
Kingston sequence.
That's like, what we refer to it at UCLA. It's, they added that. Like, there's no way that could have been in the play.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So he was like, what am I going to.
How do I flesh this out?
How do I Hollywood
this? Cinematic. What am I going to do with this? And he's just like, I know. We need to get into the sort of corruption of resort culture.
And remember,
I
mean, she's a socialist, so she'll have a lot to say
and,
about it.
And by the way, this is, I mean, here, we'll just let their own words do the talking.
Doesn't it ever bother you sometimes, though? The black-white thing? I mean, it's so obviously a class issue here. You'd think they'd all just rise up and kill us all poolside.
Why is that?
Because we have the money and they don't?
You want to give them your money? Go ahead.
Oh. Good attitude.
This
Look,
is the
I'm
movie.
I'm just making conversation here, Rita. You're the commie in the woodpile, not me.
I mean, this is what?
But here's another thing.
The pragmatism of age.
Yeah.
But this is what I don't understand about this character, because that felt not like the character that we had met
even before the body swap, right?
Right, so it's like...
Because she's like, you're a socialist. She's like, I'm whatever. Like, I went to some meetings or whatever. You know, it's not like...
Also, presumably, she was involved in the booking of their vacation, which I repeat, was at the Plantation House.
Yes.
So she signed off on this charade early on.
Right. It's a very bizarre scene, because he also says some things about... I mean, this whole... We'll break this down, but it's like, they label each other, but we're only... Only through their labels do we know that that's how they are, because we are not seeing it. Like at one point, it's like, Rita, Rita's afraid of life. We're like, is she? I never saw that. Oh, she's right. Jumping up and feeling free. Like, she doesn't seem afraid.
She's up all night
she's dancing.
When you see
that's
this.
That's that whole sequence also where at the resort where he's like, I've decided I'm going to pay for you to become a graphic designer. Yeah. And you can quit your bartending job. And first of all, it's like, it's kind of awesome to date a bartender. Like that's free Molson whenever you want it.
Oh, I mean, like,
but she's got it Molson at home, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Why pay for it if you got it at
but
home?
But you know where that home Molson's coming from? The bar.
She's squirreling away some Molson.
Her and that bartender. Yeah. I love that.
Tom.
Now, the best.
Yeah. The most, you mentioned Chandler being earlier.
Sure.
The most 1992 aspect of the film is Tom dressing like he just walked off the set of A Different World.
Yes. Absolutely.
And Malcolm X cosplay.
Yeah.
The movie, not the man himself.
No, it's
incredible.
Because they do a slow pan of the wedding and he's like one of the last.
And he's still dressed like he's in Tribal.
And you're like, okay, it's like Tom's their best friend.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's so.
They have no friends. That's another thing. It's Tucci and Tom. That's it.
By the way, that actor is right now on NCIS and still to this day.
I think he was like on Chicago Hope, right? Is that Rocky Martin? Is that his name?
Yes. His name is, Rocky Carroll.
Rocky Carroll, yeah.
Yeah, NCIS, NCIS Los Angeles, NCIS New Orleans. He's out there. And
you gotta rack them all up. Yeah. Once you're in the NCIS-averse, you gotta.
And you're right, Chicago Hope. Yes. Chicago Hope.
I remember him on Chicago Hope.
But
you're a big Hope head?
I was a Lottie completist back then, yeah, you know?
But also, but by the way, what he said,
Christine Lottie,
dude, you know who's in that show?
If you're married to Tommy Shalami, I'm gonna watch you work, baby.
I mean, the other thing of
Tommy Shalami.
Oh, listen, she's got Shalami's ear.
Yeah.
So I'm like checking in on what Christine Lottie's up to. I'm listen.
It's a masterclass.
I've watched a lot of Lottie.
Yeah.
I just feel like this is, I mean, I feel
are
like.
Are Shalami and Lottie coming? Shalami's coming. Lottie's not.
I mean, it's like, by the way, this movie cast.
Shalami plus one, yeah.
The leads are Peter and Rita. And
yeah.
They hang a lantern on it, as Jason and I say in the biz.
Absolutely.
They're like, that's impossible to say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's, not going to change it.
Yeah, it's like such a part of it, though. Oh, they leaned into it. Yeah. They kept leaning into it.
Oh, I mean, that
Deborah Monk as that aunt.
I mean, I just think that the idea of dropping in that Jamaica scene and that whole, like, it does feel like another detour that just makes the movie more convoluted.
Longer.
And it's like, and you're not, and it's like, oh, are we making a point about that? Because it doesn't seem like, again, it just doesn't seem like, it's not like. You already have two characters that are kind of different. A businessman and a bartender, creative, whatever. Then you go, now the businessman has an older man, but the older man is not even the older man anymore because the older man is just like to be younger. So you don't even have that dynamic. So it's, but the younger older man is kind of like the younger Meg Ryan.
Yes.
And then you never see Meg Ryan. So what am I watching?
Yeah,
I
don't know what I'm watching. Nobody stands for anything. Yeah. Nobody has a passion or a point of view.
It unwinds so easily. They don't even have to kiss. All they have to do is want it.
Yeah.
And apparently at this point in the movie, and I don't have the time code for it, but I'll at this moment, it's revealed that this happened because Meg Ryan also wanted to be an old man about to die, which was not present in Meg Ryan the movie.
I didn't understand that based on her? Is that based on like I don't want to bring kids into this world thing?
I guess.
But you gotta say, I think
that's what she says in that. She says in that second at the wedding, I wished that I was him.
Was this movie
enjoying life because he was licking his fingers and everything?
He was crushing that chicken wing.
Was this movie
Christ?
Maybe the movie was not sponsored by a big beer distributor. Maybe the movie was sponsored by Big Kid, like the kid industry.
Sure.
Because this movie is low-key, like, a lot of pressure on people who are childless and proud.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
This is not having it.
Oh,
They want that fertile Baldwin seed inside anyone.
This movie's whole point. So movie's whole point is we gotta breed.
Yeah.
We gotta breed.
We need more.
We gotta breed these Baldwins.
Which
and finally we've caught up to it because he's got 11 kids now.
Reality has borne out the message of this film.
I think that this movie it's a good movie if one of two people direct it. No offense to Rene Clément.
No, sure.
It's either a Rob Reiner movie that's like super sweet and straight down the middle, and they're married 22 minutes in. And Bates has a much bigger role, got a lot more Bates. And you just like get to the body switch really fast. Or It's David Cronenberg, and body it's just horror. Like body horror, like my skin is and falling
for like,
off.
For like the second half of the second act, yeah. It's a lot of sex scenes between Baldwin
well,
and the old
instead
man.
Of, if that was
it's,
the case,
it's Cronenberg's crash.
It would have to be Jennifer Jason Leigh playing the Meg Ryan part.
Guys, yes. Yeah, if it was Cronenberg, the Molson would make more sense.
Yes.
There it is.
There.
Yeah.
By the way, do we know that this may be a Cronenberg pen directing name?
This is his Alan Smithy?
This is his.
That's right.
I guess pseudonymous.
I'm also now thinking, wouldn't it movie ultimately be better about a couple that isn't getting along? Like a couple almost yes. on the verge
yeah.
of
but go through
divorce,
the wedding
yeah.
anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, yeah. Or you just do it later. Just do it later. Like there are a couple who've been together for, you know, X amount of years.
So then it's at line at Pret a Manger, the guy waiting for his egg salad is like, I'm so sorry, but could I kiss you?
Or yeah, if their thing is miserable, right, their thing has gotten toxic in yeah. the planning of the wedding, but they're going to go through with it anyway. And he represents like the happy married old man who lost his wife. And it is like, it is aspirational. Like everybody needs to learn a little from each other or something.
Yeah.
But no, it's not. There's nobody's got problems. So the body switch doesn't need to solve
right.
anything.
And they don't have any friends because the only two people there are Tucci, who's just blowing rails, and Rocky Carroll, who's like, I fixed this girl's like refrigerator. I have no idea why I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm the ice machine guy.
Ice machine work.
His face
and that's it.
Like,
there's no other friends there. There's nobody there to corroborate or like counter like, oh yeah. You
none
really
of it matters.
Yeah.
No,
we don't even see Kathy Bates worried about her father.
No. Yeah.
We don't see her.
Listen to this monologue at the end, because I feel like this monologue is the thing that gets a standing ovation in the play. Like, here it is, like,
I don't know how it happened. I don't know what I did.
I'll kill you. I swear to God I will. How the hell did you do this?
By the way, at this point, he is holding a knife at her throat.
So, when he's holding
so fake.
A butcher
it's so
knife.
So fake. It's like plastic.
Yeah.
It's like it's the like blade wobbling. Is an inch thick. It's very clearly
also,
wooden.
Also, it's super weird that the mom's like, I'm just going to step outside.
Yeah. And the mom gives him a big thumbs up like she's being coy, but it's right in front of her. So here's this monologue. I think this dueling monologue made me laugh so hard.
If I could just get inside.
I could get inside.
I'll kiss the bride. I'll be the
bride.
My
whole life would be
my
me.
Whole life would be ahead of me again. Look at her, the soft arms, the white teeth.
That smell.
That sweet smell in her breath.
A man.
Not like something rotting coming up from your insides, but soft.
Like a father.
Like a baby, and white.
An old man, with nothing,
nothing
to
lose.
All
you've
got to do
is
want it bad enough.
The score was written by the great Howard Shore.
Really?
Won Oscars for
Jesus,
Lord of the Fucking Rings.
Is that true? Yeah. So crazy.
There's so little of it helping you through this movie, unless it's during Baldwin's, like, not quite noir voiceover.
Yeah. The thing is, Howard Shore was holed up in a studio writing these, like Giorgio Moroder disco epics to score the Stanley Tucci movie.
Oh, man.
It was cut out of this movie.
I wish. I would love that. I would love to right now make that movie.
Oh, so good.
This is amazing. Hey, everybody, let's take a quick break in the action to talk about our sponsors. Our sponsors are amazing, and one of the sponsors I love is a sponsor that we are directly involved in, which is tpublic.com. tpublic.com makes t-shirts, stickers, mugs, cell phone cases, computer things, whatever, hoodies, baby things, whatever you want. They got it all, and it's all branded with specialty, how did this get made things, logos and funny things. I'm saying things a lot, and I apologize for that, but you'll get it. I can't describe exactly what it is. It's basically how did this get made merch on whatever you want it to be on, and every touring place that we've went to, we have made one of them. Last week for Pinocchio, we made the Mama Meatball shirt. We have a special one coming up for this episode as well, so definitely check that out. And go to tpublic.com/stores/hdtgm. Now, let me tell you about a place that I love. It is a place for me to purchase supplies for a small to mid-sized business. It's called Zorro.com. That's Zorro.com. And it is my go-to resource. At Zorro, you will find all things that keep a business running, no matter what kind of business you're in. I mean, Zorro offers tools, safety equipment, cleaning and maintenance supplies, office and shipping, automotive and industrial equipment, and more, including specialty items that you can't find anywhere else. Whether you're shopping for an office, factory, contracting business, or machine shop, you can get exactly what you need. And when you shop at Zorro, you will find brands that you already know and trust, like 3M, Presto, Milwaukee Tool, Schneider Electric, and Proto, all at competitive prices. You want fast, free shipping? Well, it's yours when you spend $50 or more. And if you have a question or a return, you need any help finding exactly the right item, count on Zorro's customer service team based here in the U.S. Visit Zorro, that's Zorro.com/bonkers. Sign up for a Zmail to get 15% off your first order. That's Zorro.com/bonkers and sign up for Zmail for 15% off. Zorro.com. All you need to make your business go. Obviously, we had opinions about this movie. There are people out there with a different opinion. It's now time for second opinions.
The movie was a piece of shit, yet this person recommends it. Tell me, what is the message? Maybe that art is subjective. Second opinion.
That was John LeJoie, and these are five-star reviews. All of these are culled from Amazon.com, and there are a surprising amount of Amazon reviews for this film. There are 50 total reviews, and let's see, about 62% are five stars. And let's get into it.
Really?
This is from A.H. Loeb. And it was written in 2014, and they write, "I was an extra in it. It's really enjoyable. Five stars."
Okay.
This is a kind of a recurring theme that we see a lot. This is from Jillian Knapp. It goes, "I have shared this movie with quite a few people, and no one gets it. As soon as I find a woman who understands the beauty of love between Peter and Rita, I will marry her. I have never heard anyone sing Every Time We Say Goodbye better than Annie Lennox. And Deborah Harry's voice on the rest of the soundtrack is so comforting. Not many people know this, but this is my favorite movie." Five stars.
All of Amazon.com knows this. Right?
Yeah. Can we follow up? Did he ever find love?
We got to see. I mean, that was in 2000. So this is we got some 20 years later. We got to find out.
An embittered bachelor checks in.
Jillian Knapp, let's find out. S. Malone writes, "I like this movie. A valuable message wrapped in a good storyline. And hey, Meg Ryan and Alec Baldwin? Nice." However, I wish...
Nice. I like that little accent, that little juice you put on it.
"However, I wish the guy she melded with had been cast differently. Don't know his name, good actor, but no spark." Five stars.
Spark with who?
Spark, what did you want?
I guess Alec Baldwin? And this is the one that was most disturbing to me, from Paula Latham. "My grandson loves this movie."
What?
Okay. Five stars.
Wait, is she 150? Like, how old is her grandson?
This is written in 2015. Her grandson popping this in 2015.
"My grandson loves this movie and Angel Heart. We can't stop watching both."
But I guess to go back to my big question, like, what was the valuable message? There is no valuable message.
On the back of the video box, yeah, I'm sure it says something about, like, Peter needs to learn the value of, like, your soulmate, or, like, there's something about, like, Peter finds the definition of true love.
But he already was.
I know.
Is his thing, because he has a line somewhere in the end, is his thing like he needs to be able to love her without having sex with her? Is that it, to be able to love without the sexual component? Because that was so potent in their falling in love story.
That seems to be a major component, because there is a section that the movie Yada Yadas, where they live together for a week playing board games.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
I mean,
yeah,
that's it.
And that's, which is interesting too, because think about it this way. His wife disappears.
Yeah.
Her body.
Right. Yeah.
But she is still there.
Right.
Like, what a more horrifying movie it would be if he had neither.
Sure. Yeah.
If she left for London, the old man disappeared, to truly have nothing would be...
There's a million
ways. You would be
ways
bereft.
He can still go out with Tooch, though.
Like, oh, yeah.
They just go out and do Chicago bars.
Just crush it.
Yeah.
Just crush Mammoth style, sexual perversity in Chicago style.
We've also kind of skirted the fact that the runner through the movie is this Dutch phrase.
Yes.
That
yes.
he has asked his... girlfriend turned fiance turned wife to repeat back to him. It's some sort of
It's Tinker Tailor Soldier.
I was gonna say, like, it's
sort of
exactly what
Vincent
I was gonna
Van
say
go kind of like cosplay kind of thing, and yet he's never defined what she's saying to him. And then at the end, it's revealed that what she's saying is like, I'm going to eat you with my teeth.
Yes. Like, yeah, like, wow, what teeth you have.
I think it's an excerpt from the
Big Bad Wolf,
yes,
right?
Yes,
from Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods, which was also on Broadway.
Yes, at the same time, yes.
This guy's always
similar time.
Yeah. By the way,
it's a shout out to Steve with his show up the street, doing great.
It's an Elaine Stritch shout out.
The gang.
So I want to do some experiment with you guys for a second. I'm going to play a clip from the Tony presentation in 1990 of Prelude to the Kiss, and also a scene from this movie. And it's the same scene, but you'll see how oddly nothing has changed. In the play version, it's Timothy Hutton and Mary Louise Parker. Obviously, this is Alec Baldwin and Meg Ryan.
So why can't you sleep? I want to solve this.
I wasn't exaggerating. It's been since I was 14.
Have you seen doctors?
Every time I've seen all the doctors. Every known persuasion,
right.
And I've ingested countless pills, liquids. I've seen an acupuncturist.
You did? What did it feel like?
Little needles in your back.
It hurt?
Sometimes.
So why can't you sleep? I want to solve this.
I really wasn't exaggerating. Been since I was 14.
Have you seen doctors?
I've seen all the doctors.
Uh-huh.
Of every known
right.
persuasion. I've ingested countless.
Thanks.
They drink a Molson. They are having Molsons.
I've seen an acupuncturist.
You did? What did it feel like?
Little needles in your back.
It hurts.
So this is crushing on...
That's the kind of joke that is a medium
joke.
That's
Tim Hutton.
Yeah, Tim Hutton.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's Tim Hutton.
Yeah, no, yeah. He replaced Alec Baldwin in the stage. But
that's the medium joke that slays.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Like for the Saturday matinee. Oh, yeah.
What does it feel like? Little needles in my back.
And it's also, acupuncture was so...
So
like,
weird.
Yeah, it's just like,
there's an acupuncture. There's a Chinese medicine scene in Alice, in the Woody Allen movie Alice, that is similarly like, can you believe what we're doing?
It's like when people were eating sushi for the first time.
Alec Baldwin is a normal guy. He likes a trench coat on his back, a Molson in his hand, and no needles.
Here,
America,
this exists in a world in which all of our clothes are giant and all of our beer is Canadian.
We all look like David Byrne and Stop Making Sense.
Return, only because I hate outstanding things, Paul Dooley is the dad in 16 Candles.
16 Candles, yes.
Right? To me, the current iteration of Paul Dooley is Kevin Dunn.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, terrific.
I don't know how much money... the budget of this film was, there's no info on that. The opening weekend was $5.2 million and it made $20 million.
Can you run the, what is $20 million in 2020 money?
If you adjust that for inflation, that is about, and you know what, I'm sure we can get math nerds in here, but that's about like $40 million. It's a big grossing movie. It was in the top 50 of the movies released that year, which is not like...
To be fair, there were 50 movies released that year,
Ladybugs is 82. Yeah, but that's a successful...
That's money.
That movie made its money back.
Wait, what was the budget? Sorry.
$20 million.
No, that's the
whole profit.
Sorry.
Because...
Oh, do we know the budget?
No budget.
There was no budget? It was free?
It just says no.
There's no budget. Because it cost nothing.
If the budget was $20 million, there was grift.
Yeah. There was no budget. Molson underwrote the whole movie.
Molson presents Craig Lucas's Prelude to a Kiss.
Oh, by the way, I love that scene from the Tonys, too, where they're just doing scenes from plays.
I know.
Yes.
Just straight up dramatic scenes on the Tonys. Can you imagine tuning into an award show and watching a 3-minute dramatic scene?
I hope they used to like rotate those like on a Lazy Susan or something. So it'd be like Tim Hutton's like, wait, I'm not done my scene.
Please also, go like, find it. It's on there. It's worth watching. It's a great, just fun to see.
It really captures the rhythm that once you put on camera, it just fails spectacularly.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like watching two polite people play a slow game of paddleball.
You need,
just hit it back, hit
you
it back.
You need someone to kind of help transition it to something else. I think that's not a bad thing.
And it's right there. You need Tooch blowing a fat rail.
Yeah.
It needs conflict of any kind. Yeah. An antagonist.
And by the way,
it's not
short. It's like an hour and 45.
Yeah,
it feels long.
By the way, we're describing this podcast right now. the hope for conflict.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Two of us did not emerge yet.
Well,
How dare you asshole.
Besides your amazing podcast to watch and all the podcasts that you do, Let's talk about Briar Patch first. It's coming out February 6th, so it'll be out by the time this podcast is out. You'll be
well, so history will have rendered its verdict.
The patch heads are already blowing up the fucking Twitterverse.
They're all over social.
The patchies.
Are they up in your feed?
Yeah, there we are. We have a lot of patchies on our
Great.
But tell us a little bit about it. Let's have I mean, this looks great. Everything
this is
I've
Andy's
seen.
Show that he's created for USA?
Yeah.
The USA Network, yeah.
Based on a book by an author.
Yeah, we're not going to mention authors.
Produced
on this
by Sam Esmail of Senior Robot fame.
Yeah. That's how it's broadcast in parts of the world. This is a kind of fun, surreal murder mystery show. 10 episodes, closed ended. I know Jason hates it when shows ask questions they don't answer.
I don't like it. I want it. I want
closed-ended
it
in the sense
up.
That, I mean, we can come back to this world. We can't come back to this world.
Well, never say never about anything. But this is the mystery that this show is about, which is about Rosario Dawson's character returning to this small, existentially corrupt Texas town to investigate the murder of her sister. We will solve this murder in the season. And
that's
hopefully
exciting.
Get to tell a different story if we get to do another year of it.
And then it turns out that it takes place on one of the planets that explodes in Star Wars Rise of Skywalker.
Oh,
so,
guys.
Tough look.
Tough beat for Rosario.
She's like, I solved it. Boom.
is interesting.
She's like, fuck, are we on Coruscant? God damn it.
But talking about adapting, I mean, you're in this world too where you're adapting, a novel. And I mean, how is that to just, how did you kind of approach that?
Guys, you can see my bracelet, WWCLD. It's what wouldn't Craig Lucas do? it is actually a question that I was thinking about even when talking about this movie, because I think that for me it was important. The book is by Ross Thomas. You burnt, Jason.
By the way, you guys talked about Ross Thomas on The Watch, which made me go get a Ross Thomas book. And
I bought a Ross Thomas book.
I was out there being like, someone adapt this. Then, okay. Joe Boo, I'll do it myself. my attitude was like, I love these books. These are my favorite books and they will continue to exist. And so if you're going to adapt something, it's better rather than sort of slavishly adapt the thing which already exists, find the thing in it that you love and try to chase it your own way. And obviously we had a great spine for this mystery story, great characters, great tone, great world. But the book was written in 1984. It was about a man named Benjamin Dill returning to his hometown. Rosario Dawson plays Allegra Dill, the show set in the present. So for me, it was more about doing justice to it and paying tribute to it, but using it as an opportunity to tell a different kind of story.
And what episode does the body swapping happen? 6, 7?
Well, the thing is, you're going to love this, Paul, because I know you're a little – it takes you some time to realize it's happened. There are kisses throughout the first 5 episodes. I won't tell you which one.
Oh, so there's a lot of swapping.
The juicy. Swap. And sometimes – it swaps back before we've even.
This is what I want.
But the
this
actors
is what
knew.
I want.
Yeah. I was in their heads the whole time.
This,
being
if
like,
you
took. Guess what? You're Brian Garrity now. Boom.
You're Jay Ferguson. Deal with it.
Ed Asner didn't take well to it, but he rolled with it. When he and Alan Cumming kissed, that's the day everyone wanted to be on set.
Oh, I'm sure. That, by the way, if you told me that's what was happening in Twin Peaks, I would believe you.
Yeah, exactly, right?
It's constant body swapping.
Yeah, sure.
And Chris, not only do you host The Watch, but you also host, or you're a part of The Rewatchables and The Ringer NBA Show, which I'm a big fan of.
Thank you.
My question to you is, how do you do it? People always say to me, how do you balance so many things? And not only do you come on.
How do you watch so much?
You watch
you
so much.
You are consuming more content
asleep.
Than anyone I know.
And you can speak passionately and authoritatively about it all.
I only watch one episode of anything. So I'll talk about Narcos, but I've only ever seen about 20 minutes of it.
You got it.
No, I don't have kids. It
right.
Really,
I mean,
just,
I guess that, yeah.
Just I don't either.
Amazing.
I don't even
out.
Have a wife. You've got a wife. Yeah. But you're out there watching every episode of everything.
It does
not
seem that way.
Not
I'm
just
pretty,
the outsider,
I try
not just
to be
the
targeted,
good stuff.
Yeah.
But Taboo? Not Taboo. What
Dude,
was it
Taboo's
called?
Good as shit. Don't even know Taboo.
But here's the thing about Chris.
The terror.
So generous about it that today, the podcast for people who listen to The Watch has become Chris gently putting up with me as I admit to not watching anything. And we are ostensibly a pop culture podcast. We're talking today about The Outsider, a show that we both love, that I am watching and I'm caught up on. And he just casually references Mrs. Fletcher.
Yeah.
I'm like, motherfucker, you know I haven't watched
You know
that.
I had to watch The Fletch, though? Come on.
It's anything Catherine Hahn, you got to get your Fletch in.
But it's so
The Watch is one of my favorite podcasts, period.
It's so good.
From when it was called Hollywood Playbook back in the day.
You guys were prospectus.
Prospectus, sorry.
Classic Hollywood bullshit.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Garg.
You guys were both guests on
yes.
the podcast.
Yes.
Wonderful yeah. guests. Welcome back anytime.
It's such a fun show. It's a fun show for I just think if you're like I always feel like what I love about it is it's the immediate book club that I want to have on Monday morning. Like, I'm like, okay.
Books.
Like, yeah. you know, like, it's like, I,
but yes.
But no, it's so fulfilling because it's like, yeah, I want to talk about what happened on Barry last night. Like, I want to.
I think that's when we have the most fun. Yeah. Is when we have like a Sunday night show or something like that where we're like really excited to talk about it episode by episode.
Or like when you guys got into Thrones or when you guys yeah. got into, when you guys get obsessed with a show, it's exciting to tune in.
S5 Homeland.
Oh, yeah.
But that is the most. I mean,
even if I don't watch that yeah. show, but no, even if I don't watch Homeland, I will still listen to you guys talk about it.
Well, that's very nice. But that's also one of the reasons why I think we'd like to do the show, because our favorite thing about TV in the first part of the last decade was that suddenly we could all talk about it together. Mm-hmm. And it felt like we were all watching the same shows. That's increasingly less the case.
Sure.
But every so often we can find something that we can get excited about. And that enthusiasm hopefully is contagious.
And I will say, Chris, I really enjoyed the rewatchables. Listening to yes. you talk stuff and crack up Quentin Tarantino
was during rewatchables
was
so
next
fun.
Level. Unstoppable. The unstoppable episode of rewatchables, Chris Ryan is crushing Quentin Tarantino. It's amazing.
It's so fun. So Quentin Tarantino sits in for three episodes. Yeah. He picked the three. You guys are, it's great. It's so much fun. And they're weird. Not the ones that I would, I mean, no. Unstoppable is one of Quentin Tarantino's
favorite films of the decade.
Yes. Yeah. And by the way, this is the same man who said his favorite film of this year is Crawl, I believe.
It's among them.
Among
yeah.
them, yeah. Which is great. It's so definitely check out the rewatchables. And then
this is what's super weird about podcasts, because both of us are big fans of you guys predating this podcast.
Yes.
Chris and I were at an eight, you know, we're industry guys, so we were at an HBO party.
Oh, yeah.
And we
yeah.
saw Jason a few years ago. We were conspiring, like, of all the people here who we are fans of, I feel like we could talk to that guy. And you came over to us. And so to yeah. discover that we're all listening to each other is pretty nice.
I love
but
it.
Then when Quentin Tarantino is listening to these guys, that's
I mean, that's
pretty
next
wild.
That's next level.
It's crazy.
Oh my God.
And
it's
I will
nuts.
And I will just say one thing about the Ringer NBA podcast, which I love, is the length.
Yeah.
I think it's the right length. I feel like I listen to so many podcasts that, I mean, well, I'm sure
here
you're going to look at the time on this one. But it's so great. It's like I feel like I get my basketball stuff and I'm ready to go.
That's I feel like I have a quarterback brain where I can feel the footsteps come in. And at about 40, I'm like, let's hit a check.
Yeah.
Do you guys know who listens to The Watch? We just found this out. Is playwright Craig Lucas. Huge fan.
Huge fan.
He loves all the bits.
It's honestly, it's the
Hollywood Fixer, the Mando voice yeah. does.
It's the only reason he's hanging on. It's just episodes of The Watch.
By the way, you guys Craig get a Lucas. Lot of playwrights
yeah.
who love your show.
And authors.
Yes.
Jason, you want to plug anything?
Nothing really. I got nothing to plug, except I'm going to say the new Destroyer record is phenomenal. Francis Quillen from Hop Along
That's
has a new record.
That's my favorite record.
Unreal record.
Oh, likewise.
She's
so good.
Phenomenal. See, most exciting voice in rock and roll.
I want to just get you to make Spotify playlists that I can subscribe to, because I feel like that would be a social media.
I'll send
media.
You one right now.
Oh, I would love that. I would be on that 100%.
Dunzo.
You know what? I don't even know what I want to plug right now, but if you've not caught up on The Good Place, definitely check that out. What a wonderful end to a great, great series. Make sure that you tune in next week to our mini episode where we will be tackling all your questions about Prelude to a Kiss. You can give us a call at 619-PAUL-ASK. That's 619-PAUL-ASK. You can ask me questions about your life, your love, anything at all. We've been playing around with these mini episodes and they've been so much fun. So give us a call next week. We'll talk about Prelude to a Kiss. We'll talk about your personal problems and we'll deal with them. I want to give a shout out to our engineer, Devin, in the booth. I want to give a shout out to our producer, Cody. Also, our producer who helps find every one of these movies, and that is Avril Halley. You can follow her at Movie Bitches on YouTube and on Twitter, but she found this gem and she is just amazing. Also for research, Nate Kiley doing the Lord's work, finding that amazing clip from the Tonys. And finally, July Diaz, who, like me, sits through all these episodes and sifts through and helps us cut them down and make them very, very palatable, especially in the live episodes when like 9 people are singing. He does some amazing work there. People, we will see you next week for a mini episode. Bye for now.